TV special.
Fellas, made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means?
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
Everything you are and everything you
I'm not afraid to
Butterflies and Hurricanes, the third single from the third album, 2003's Absolution. That was, of course, Muse. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the B-Side episode 229 from MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Uppenpilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. The real news, remixed, and it's September 2nd, 2011, and we're coming to you live from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and of course, simulcast live thanks to zeropointradio.com and revereradio.net. As you may or may not know, we are returning from a vacation, and I'm still a little lagging. I've probably only been back on the West Coast for about 36 hours. So, not enough time to put together the proper media extravaganza that we generally do in this time slot. Yes, we are recording and broadcasting live in our regular main show time slot, but we're doing a B-side because it's no frills time. I had an amazing time. Emotional highs and lows. A blast. And I made the remark that when I got home, I had to do some laundry because I'd been wearing my heart on my sleeve all week. So I may have brought a little bit of accent back with me. We'll have to work that out. And there's so much to go over. There was no way I was going to put together a comprehensive show for you after having been away. We only really updated our Twitter feed from me. But of course, thanks to Alan in Omaha for continuing to update Cyberspace War and Holy Hexes. Just some of the sites in the growing Media Monarchy Kingdom. And a huge thanks to a couple of the folks that have gotten in touch with me really recently about coming on board and helping post things to the sites in the kingdom. And we'll work on that very, very soon. We always like to glance at the breaking news to see what is going down, and as I was speaking that sentence, Google News automatically updated, because the top story was San Diego lifeguards to watch for sharks this Labor Day weekend. You could also alter that headline to say San Diego lifeguards watching new movie Shark Attack 3D. Opening this Labor Day weekend. A perfect mirror image of the weeks leading up to September 11th, 2001, with a corporate controlled media paying attention to essentially nothing but shark attacks and missing girls. It was the Gary Condit, Chandra Levy circus. And of course, we have another missing Aruba girl, and all sorts of other things going on in the media with celebrities like the Bonos and the Gaddafis. Tropical Storm Lee to hit New Orleans this weekend. Again, as I was taking all of this in, we also see Tropical Storm Katia, I'm assuming it's pronounced K-A-T-I-A, regains hurricane strength. Just a few moments before I went to my last day of work last week before going on vacation, my girlfriend read a headline out to me and said, there was an earthquake? The Pentagon was evacuated? Earthquake on the East Coast? And that's what began essentially heading towards that very area, but in my home state of West Virginia. West by God, Virginia. And we got there, and the weekend was essentially dominated with Hurricane Irene threataganda, and we'll reference that in just a little bit. But let's glance at the other top stories, again, on this September 2nd, 2011, as we're trying to get back in the saddle again. Job growth at halt in U.S., worst showing in 11 months. No new jobs added in August as unemployment rate holds at 9.1. I did some quick searching to see if I could find a longer, fuller percentage rate, because it certainly wouldn't surprise me if the longer number was 9.11. as we see the memes. Obama to drop smog initiative. Purported Gaddafi message says Libyan capital move to his birthplace. A United Nations team was on the ground in Libya to reestablish the organization's presence there amid dire water, food, and fuel shortages, the United Nations said Friday. And yes, it's official. Netflix prices have increased. We will discuss those things and so very much more on this, what we're calling a no-frills B-side episode 229. We'll see if my gears get turning and we're able to perform in our general way. Didn't have the time to put things in order. Didn't have time to do a bunch of clips. Didn't have time to do a bunch of fancy editing, but we are going to get through the news and we are going to keep you updated. And again, not trying to say I'm the end-all, be-all source of alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. And in my absence, hopefully you checked out other sites like blacklistednews.com or cryptogon.com. So many other amazing non-corporate independent alternative media outlets like CorbettReport.com, TragedyAndHope.com, GroundZeroMedia.org, all those. So we're going to go through the sister sites in the kingdom, beginning with cyberspacewar.com with a quick DEFCON news purge of headlines, unusual clouds, and cattle mutilations. Update on the phone hacking scandal. Millie Dowler's phone hackers used more than one voicemail. That's from The Guardian, and I believe we also have an update reporting on an arrest made just earlier this September 2nd. Meanwhile, from Threat Level, lawmakers call for probe of medical devices after researcher hacks insulin pump. And from inner space to outer space, UFO spotted over Mishawaka, Indiana, that is. That's from GodDiscussion.com and from LiveScience.com. UFO, quote-unquote, over Chinese airport, just an unusual cloud. And it's always important to remember that when you see all these things of UFO, that doesn't mean alien. It means it's something we can't identify. And it's usually military. New Mexico cop says military responsible for cattle mutilations. That is an interesting and longer piece from the Huffington Post, which we've tried to shy away from since becoming the latest acquisition to be made by the interlocking, interbred, multi-generational serial killer families that control our money and our media. Our media, our school. And I believe this New Mexico cop is now deceased. And he has said what other folks have said, and I know I learned some things from Clyde Lewis about this. It's black op military. And the last note on this, Cyberspace War, DEFCON News Purge, Big Pharma discredited by Twitter drug pushing, says official. That's from theregister.co.uk. Now we're going to blast through all the other related amazing outer space stories on cyberspacewar.com. And as we'll say with this site and Holy Hexes, because we have other folks in the kingdom helping to write, and because I've been leaning back on vacation, I haven't wrapped my head around all of these stories, so I may not try and dive into all of them because I may fumble and bubble around. Having said that, 1976 secret Apollo space mission to the far side of the moon. And now that reminds me, isn't there Apollo 18 horror movie opening this weekend? In 2007, videos appeared on YouTube that claimed to be images from secret Apollo 20 XX double cross mission to the far side of the moon. Images include a well-preserved female astronaut recovered from a relic alien spacecraft estimated at 1.5 billion years old. The aforementioned Ground Zero Live host Clyde Lewis discussed alleged mission with his producer Olaf Phillips, who finds it to be an expensive hoax, if it is indeed one. Phillips just sees enough credibility in the story to make a good mystery or conspiracy. For more on this, 2007 UFO Data magazine article Apollo 20 Controversy gives a good recap. And that article does go on, my friends. DARPA to award 100-year Starship seed money on 11-11-11. We have discussed the DARPA 100-year Starship study previously. And isn't it interesting? The awarding of the grant will happen on November 11th, 2011. You can read more about the 100-year starship study at 100yss.org. It's just a coincidence. The numbers have no occult significance whatsoever. You can always have a retro drive-in weekend and check out Disney's 1955 movie Man in Space. As Walt Disney helped sell the American public on space, Man in Space, a science feature from Tomorrowland, first of a three-part series in the 50s, and you can watch the whole thing on YouTube with, of course, links provided. It was popular, and possibly because of its pyrotechnics and the inclusion of multitude of rocket firings. We have more on Project Blue Book, 1952 to 1969, getting into Project Sign and General Nathan Twining. You can go to Vandenberg. That would be General Vandenberg for more about Project Sign. Dutch Sense 2011 experience. Project Camelot interviewed Dutch Sense recently discussing harp rings, scalar squares, radar screens, so much more. Also, of course, getting into Fukushima nuclear fallout that we are still soaking in as we speak. Coming up on the six-month anniversary that, of course, will happen on 9/11 from 3/11. Interesting note, the nuclear material will decay into barium and strontium, which provides a medium that would be the canvas for a holographic projection in the sky. Fake rapture, Project Bluebeam, call it what you will. War of the Worlds, mass hysteria. We reported recently the crash of the DARPA Falcon HTV-2. Now we'll put possible quotes around crash. Did the joint DARPA-U.S. Air Force-backed HTV-2, that's hyper-technology vehicle, to crash into the Pacific as widely reported? Brooks Agnew interviewed not that Kevin Smith on X Squared Radio recently, suggesting only telemetry was lost after 9 minutes, switching to a secure channel to send a message. And was its reported top speed really its top speed? InfoWars did a recent interview with Bob Bowman, getting further into DARPA's HTV-2. Did it crash just to the west of me? Or is it another in a long line of military cyberspace war hoaxes? But something timely to listen to from the Los Angeles Times: listening to the sun improves sunspot forecasts. Sunspots, those dark regions on the surface of the sun whose high magnetic activity has ripple effects for Earthlings, seem to emerge and fade without warning. But now, by listening to the sounds the sun makes, scientists have managed to predict when a sunspot will appear to 2 days beforehand, up to 2 days beforehand. The findings, published in two Fridays ago edition of the journal Science, with the link for you, sciencemag.org. You can get the abstract, but you gotta pay for the research. But the findings could help solar physicists understand how to better predict solar flares and other space weather events that can harm astronauts and damage power and electronic systems here on Terra Firma. We've also reported that coming soon, now that they've shut down the space shuttle program, it goes to the quote-unquote private sector, space tourism. Have you seen ads or checked out Orbitz with a Z? For the space tourism package, there are no listings yet, but the wait may be shorter than you think. The Astronomy Cast podcast go over one of the few bright spots of human endeavor, and that could be space tourism. Better start saving your money now. Last couple postings on cyberspacewar.com get into Jacques Vallée and the Pentacle Memorandum and Project Stork, getting into Dr. Hynek. Battelle Memorial Institute, Dr. Howard Cross, the Robertson Panel, and so very much more. 2008, coronal mass ejection, CME as never seen before in high def. New detailed imaging of CME adds new definition and clarity to the solar event. A pair of wonderful UniverseToday.com articles provide the insight into the phenomena as well as spectacular imaging. And there's also a video, Watch a Solar Storm Slam into Earth. Coming soon to a theater near you. That does it for CyberspaceWar.com, my friends. If any of those inner space, outer space stories appeal to you, please bookmark that site, tweet about it, share it. All of those things, just to help spread the word about what I am, just another in the field of many amazing independent alternative media outlets. And if you find Media Monarchy valuable, we, of course, implore you to check out the donate button on the top right of all of our pages. Your support helps keep Media Monarchy going and growing and going. And speaking of growing, we go to foodworldorder.com for a quick binge and purge of headlines. Sugar slave blast. Antifreeze tainted vinegar kills 11 in China, 120 poisoned, and that is appropriately enough from the Barf blog. Russia Today reporting on foreign students protesting slave labor at Hershey's. One injured in an ADM, that's Archer Daniels Midland, blast near Clinton, Iowa. And finally, the latest food investigations video from naturalnews.com, vitamin water exposed as sugar water.
It's sold everywhere. It's a highly popular beverage marketed as something that's good for you. The label emphasizes vitamins and water. But as it turns out, after water, the most prominent ingredient in vitamin water is none other than fructose, a type of refined white sugar. And that makes the first two ingredients of vitamin water sugar and water, not vitamins and water. And if vitamins plus water equals all you need, then why is there so much sugar in vitamin water? The sugar content is probably a lot more than you'd suspect, too. While the label only claims 13 grams of sugar per serving, the Coca-Cola company has cleverly defined one 20-ounce bottle of vitamin water to be 2.5 servings. This means if you drink the entire contents of the vitamin water bottle at one setting, you're actually getting 32.5 grams of sugar, not the 13 grams implied on the label. That's as much sugar as you'd find in many bottles of soda, which is what led Steve Gardner, the litigation attorney for the nonprofit Center for Science in the Public Interest, to declare vitamin water is non-carbonated soda, providing unnecessary added sugar and contributing to weight gain, obesity, diabetes, and other diseases. The Coca-Cola company, however, has aggressively marketed vitamin water with the implied message that it can enhance and improve your health. But when challenged on that claim in the courtroom, Coca-Cola's lawyers made this astonishing statement, saying no consumer could reasonably be misled into thinking vitamin water was a healthy beverage. Vitamin water isn't really healthy, say Coca-Cola's lawyers. And if you think it is, perhaps thanks to all of Coca-Cola's misleading advertising that implies the beverage is healthy, then you are apparently an unreasonable person. Virtually every piece of marketing surrounding vitamin water implies that the beverage is good for your health. It's got vitamin A, proclaims the label for the focus flavor of vitamin water, an important nutrient for your eyes as they focus on everything. But what Coca-Cola probably doesn't want you to focus on is that vitamin water is actually a sugar water beverage that contains tiny amounts of mostly synthetic vitamin chemicals, such as cyanocobalamin, the cheap chemical form of vitamin B12. What emerges from looking closely at vitamin water is that it's misleading on multiple levels. The name is misleading. The serving sizes are misleading. The advertising is misleading, and even the front label is misleading. The kiwi strawberry version of vitamin water, for example, contains neither kiwis nor strawberries. Vitamin water, it turns out, is a sugar-laden junk beverage that even its own manufacturer admits isn't really good for you. If you're looking for real vitamin water, buy a countertop juicing machine and several pounds of organic produce like celery, apples, cucumbers, pineapples, parsley, and pears. Juice all that and you'll produce the most vitamin-rich water available anywhere on the planet. Plus, that form of vitamin water is alive with enzymes and nutrients that fight cancer, prevent diabetes, halt heart disease, and enhance cognitive function, among other benefits. Of course, fresh plant juice can't be preserved and bottled by Coca-Cola or any other company because many of the best health properties are destroyed through pasteurization, and virtually everything sold in a bottle at the grocery store is pasteurized. That's why even Odwalla and Naked Juice products can't compare to the nutrient value of fresh fruit and vegetable juices made right in your own kitchen. So if you want a beverage that's really good for you, make your own juice at home. Don't make the mistake of believing the Coca-Cola propaganda that implies vitamin water is a healthy beverage. The company's own attorneys have already admitted it isn't. And that's the case of the vitamin water deception. If you enjoy this segment of Food Investigations, share it with your friends. This is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, reporting for the nonprofit Consumer Wellness Center.
Furthermore, on foodworldorder.com, USDA signs with Rockefeller's Council of Foundations to help exploit rural U.S. From the always fantastic foodfreedom.wordpress.com, notes that on Friday, that would be August 19th, Agriculture Secretary Tom Monsanto Creature Vilsack announced that the USDA has signed an agreement with the Council on Foundations, quote, to provide new sources of capital, new job opportunities, workforce investment strategies, end quote, and last on the list, but at the heart of it, identification of additional resources. The group will work with Obama's newly created Rural Council, which Vilsack also chairs, to help implement the United Nations Agenda 21, a 300-page, 40-chapter soft law policy that came out of the UN Conference on Environment and Development in Brazil in 1992. Here now is briefly Agenda 21 for dummies.
Sustainable development has become the popularized expression for Agenda 21. Agenda 21 is the 1992 United Nations Rio Declaration on the Environment and Development.
It is the agenda for the 21st century you're living in today, for a brave new world where everything that you cherished and held true will no longer exist.
Agenda 21 defines itself as a comprehensive plan of action to be taken globally, nationally, and locally by organizations of the United Nations systems.
It also elevates nature above man. And it contains something called the precautionary principle, where basically you're guilty until you're proven innocent.
Sustainable development is the philosophy designed to bring human beings across the globe under the full control of a narrow human elite.
It's a 40-chapter document to basically control the world. It's based entirely on socialist control mechanisms.
Sustainable developers have designed a global movement coordinated through a global to local action plan to create world government in accordance with certain objectives. These objectives include an end to national sovereignty, the abolition of private property, the restructure of the family unit, and increasing limitations and restrictions on mobility and individual opportunity.
The Green Goal includes the listings of what's not sustainable. A couple of examples include private property.
728 lists fossil fuels.
Golf courses and ski lodges are not.
Consumerism.
Irrigation is not sustainable.
Paved roads.
Commercial agriculture.
Herbicides, pesticides. Elsewhere, it lists farmlands, pastures, grazing of livestock.
And the family unit. The focus of sustainable development is the abolition of private property, societal undermining of the family, and abandonment of the constitutional protection of unalienable rights as described in the Declaration of Independence.
You see, I sat on the Santa Cruz Agenda 21 committees. Now, this was a lot of crazy ideas. This was back in the mid-90s. Crazy ideas I heard. Mother Earth's surface wasn't to be scratched. Human beings were to be concentrated into human settlement zones. Educational systems were to focus on the environment as the central organizing principle. All aspects of life were covered. Well, I went to these committees at the request of some people who told me that I needed to understand what was going on. And I came back and I said, this is craziness. This is so silly. It has no chance of having any effect on our society. Well, I was wrong.
The United States government's support for sustainable development, Agenda 21, is very clear. In 1992, while the real conference was going on, George Bush, then president, was there where he executed the Agenda 21 protocols on behalf of the United States and brought it back to Washington, D.C. within a year. Bill Clinton, by executive order, no congressional review, established the President's Council for Sustainable Development. In Santa Cruz, we've got a two-lane freeway system. We need four, but what we're getting is hundreds of millions of dollars of federal money to take a dilapidated rail line that Southern Pacific wants to put in the hands of somebody else so that a commuter line can be built along the railroad track that'll be followed by 14-story buildings where people will live in stacking and packing units, where developers or so-called sustainable developers will build these high-rises with federal dollars. In fact, Santa Cruz has received a $300 million federal grant to build the first 3,000 of these stacking and packing units. The County Board of Supervisors has said if you were a sustainable developer, you're immune from any construction defect liability. It's a partnership between selected developers building this new world order and the government using the American taxpayer dollars in order to do it. This is a map of the Wildlands Project. To explain the map, the red are areas that are to be off limits to human beings. No resource development, no human activity. If you live there, you won't. The yellow areas are the areas for major control of all human activity. If you live there, you won't. The black areas, the black dots, are the smart growth zones. That's where human beings are to be stacked and packed in small living units along rail tracks. The smart growth program ultimately has jobs assigned and children cared for by the state.
The question has been asked many times how the people who are perpetrating these things expect to do this and make it last. And the answer to that is that you steal a generation of children and you indoctrinate them so that they accept these ideas and they become global citizens in the coming global village.
Though couched in eco-friendly motives, Agenda 21 will severely limit water, electricity, and transportation, even deny human access to our most treasured wilderness areas. It would monitor all lands and people. No one would be free from the watchful eye of the new global tracking and information system, so wrote Barrett Kjos in 1998. Patrick Wood believes that today's smart grids are doing just that and gives an excellent 40-minute speech with a link to YouTube for you. Ironically, Secretary Vilsack made the announcement while hosting a White House rural forum at the Iowa State Fair. The same day, news broke out about how the USDA lied to farmers and ranchers about federal drought insurance. Vilsack has refused to pay up during the worst drought in U.S. history. Link, link, link. The Council on Foundations formed in 1949 and was joined by the Rockefellers in 1958. It has since morphed into a think tank drawing from the government and private sector. It is funded mainly by corporations and foundations, including Ford, Lilly, and General Mills, to provide, quote, a wide variety of services primarily for endowed grant-making organizations throughout the United States and in foreign countries. USDA signs with Rockefeller's Council of Foundations to exploit rural U.S. That, again, from Food Freedom. Continuing down our own foodworldorder.com from the New York Times, the ban on using food stamps to buy soda rejected by the USDA. Federal officials, again, August 19th, Friday, rejected Mayor Michael R. Bloomberg's proposal to bar New York City's food stamp users from buying soda and other sugary drinks with them, maybe like vitamin water. The decision derailed one of the mayor's big ideas to fight obesity and poor nutrition in the city. Bloomberg and the city's health commissioner, Dr. Thomas A. Farley, were quick to criticize the ruling by the USDA as a disservice to low-income residents. Dr. Farley, who said he was very upset by the decision, said that it really calls into question how serious the USDA is about addressing the nation's most serious nutritional problem. More on the story from Gothamist, The Wall Street Journal, and a flashback to our own posting of this story originally back in October of last year. Finally, on foodworldorder.com from Food Safety News, blue plastic chips found in ground beef. A North Carolina-based company issued a recall of its ground beef product after a consumer found an unexpected ingredient in the product, blue plastic chips. Vantage Foods of Lenoir, or Lenoir, North Carolina, is recalling 1,642 pounds of ground beef that may contain the foreign material, announced by the United States Department of Agriculture's Food Safety and Inspection Service. That would be the USDA FSIS. With a link for you. That's all we've got on Food World Order as we now move to holyhexes.com, one of the newest sites in the kingdom that does have not only my man Alan in Omaha working for it, but we also have my man, Zach, who you may recall hearing interviewed on this very show, I believe episode 200. He posted a quick piece on the chimera androgen, the esoteric mystique of Baphomet and Abraxas, noting that the Eon Eye blog shedding significant light upon the more esoteric study as the figure of the figure known as Baphomet. The study of Baphomet, that's B-A-P-H-O-M-E-T, being a subject of particular interest, takes many twists and turns. It's easy to see how this particular character gets a reputation for association with devil worship or Luciferian agendas. This piece from the Eon Eye gets into a great swath of info regarding the demon in question, on the origins and the reasons and the suppositions and more. A quick note of Encyclopedia Occult. There's over 2,500 entries to browse in the occult dictionary.info, the Encyclopedia of the Occult, a compendium of info on the occult sciences, occult personality, psychic science, magic, spiritism, and mysticism, written by Lewis Spence and first published in 1920. It is now and currently in the public domain. Another source you can reference to improve your knowledge, and we've gone over some other recent postings on Holy Hexes, that is, the Knowledge Files and others. A couple of random related, unrelated updates posted below the Encyclopedia of the Occult post. $22 billion Kerala Hindu temple treasure trove bringing riches and challenges. That update from Faith World from Reuters, and we provide our own flashback to July of this year. Billions worth of treasure found in Indian temple. And the last note from HollywoodNews.com, Health Magazine happily shills for Scientology. Furthermore, on HolyHexus.com, The Book of Aquarius and the Alchemical Revolution, filmmaker Jay Widener, who produced The Secrets of Alchemy, recommends everybody download The Book of Aquarius, which you can get at sacredmysteries.com. Jay Widener, who you may have heard on the always provocative Red Ice Radio, calls the book on alchemy the best he's ever encountered. It must be the writing of a very knowledgeable source, relates Jay Widener, whose study of alchemy spans decades. On a recent Rents program, Widener announced enthusiastically that the book may go viral because it shares a secret in the making of a philosopher's stone, a meme and name you may have heard recently. Widener states it's a preparation, a cake, that reverses aging and only skills necessary is an ability to cook. The stone was popular in Europe, obtained from a local blacksmith until 1100, when banned by the church, again, according to Widener. From his study, he labels the Book of Aquarius as the real thing and heard rumors for years about the possible availability to the public. And that story does continue, as you may notice on all of our pages. We keep the post on the front page short, and if you want to expand them, if you want to jump after the break, as they may say, you hit the link that says, "Would you like to know more?" Which you may or may not recall coming from the Paul Verhoeven schlocky amazing classic Starship Troopers. But I digress. But let's progress. Continuing on HolyHexus.com, the Jet Propulsion Lab, JPL, and the occult roots of NASA. Was John Whiteside Parsons, a self-taught chemist and a founder of JPL, Jet Propulsion Laboratories, or Jack Parsons Laboratories? Was he a self-taught chemist and the founder of the JPL, or a slimy degenerate, or even the James Dean of the occult world? Jack Parsons, fascinating figure, however anybody views him. Richard Metzger, I believe the founder of disinformation, disinfo.com, has a 2003 essay extolling Parsons' lack of hypocrisy. Metzger quotes from Parsons' own manifesto to the Antichrist to make his point, quote, "An end to the pretense and lying hypocrisy of Christianity, an end to the servile virtues and superstitious restrictions, an end to the slave morality, an end to prudery and shame, to guilt and sin, for these are the only evil the Son, that is fear. An end to all authority that is not based on courage and manhood, to the authority of lying priests, conniving judges, blackmailing police, and an end to the servile flattery and cajolery of mods, the coronation of mediocrities, the ascension of dolts." End quote. Parsons makes valid observations, all too true, unfortunately. That article does continue on JPL, the occult roots of NASA. As we switch and peer through the keyhole of the door to Club 27, is it ritual public sacrifice? Our procession of young artists to die young at the age of 27, is it some kind of sick ritual public sacrifice? This is the keen question that the always, again, provocative VigilantCitizen.com asks in the recent article, Amy Winehouse and the 27 Club. Are there cults protected by black ops and government-connected corporate media connections with close ties to the police state? Are they connected to these rather public deaths? Everybody dismisses them as performers succumbing to pressures and meeting a tragic and early demise, quickly attributed to drug and alcohol abuse. Is there also a shadowy, premeditated selection process at work? Vigilant Citizen suspects in the article there's more than meets the eye in the early deaths of Amy Winehouse and Heath Ledger, which are similar and fit the mold of other seminal 27 Club members, Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison, Kurt Cobain, more and more and more. I believe we also just recently had the MTV Awards, which VigilantCitizen.com usually does an amazing rundown on the massive occult symbolism going on in those shows, viewed by bajillions worldwide taking part in it. And it gets uglier on holyhexes.com. South Carolina pastor charged with kidnap and rape of three women. From goddiscussion.com, a South Carolina church pastor, Dale Richardson, charged with kidnapping and raping three women at gunpoint, denied bond by a Dorchester County magistrate who described him as, very rightly so, a danger to society.
Bond has been denied for a former Lowcountry pastor charged with more sex crimes. Dale Richardson went before a judge for the fifth time since his first arrest back in July. ABC News 4's Nikki Gaskin joins us now with all the details. Nikki?
Victoria, Dale Richardson faced a judge yet again, this time for charges of two counts of kidnapping as well as two counts of criminal sexual conduct. These charges stem from two incidents dating back to January 5th and August 12th of last year. According to the incident report, in the first case, Richardson pointed a gun at the victim, placed a hood over her head, and took her to an abandoned mobile home behind a church on Barnhill Road. According to the report, the victim was sexually assaulted. In the second case, it's reported that Richardson picked up a woman hitchhiking on Rivers Avenue. He then drove her down a secluded area on Mallard Road in Somerville, pulled out a gun, and raped her.
Your bond, based upon the charges and the record of charges and the fact that you may be a danger to the community, is denied.
Now, Richardson has a wife of nearly 30 years. In court today, he was still wearing his wedding ring. Reporting live in Somerville, Nikki Gaskins, ABC News 4.
All right, thank you, Nikki. This brings the total number of sexual assault charges to 3 and the number of kidnapping charges to 4.
Merry Chrislam, Tennessee church, where we're just driving up the road from South Carolina to Tennessee from BeliefNet. Tennessee church lends sanctuary to local Muslims. The Tennessee pastor startled his neighborhood, his congregation, and local Muslims when he invited the local Islamic community to celebrate Ramadan inside his church. Their own cultural center was under construction nearby. So Pastor Steve Stone offered the main sanctuary at his 550-member Heartsong Church in Cordova, a Memphis suburb, as a place for Muslim faithful to pray during the Holy Week of Ramadan 2010. It sparked an unusual alliance that's still strong a year later, reports your favorite NPR.
When a group of Muslims started building a mosque outside of Memphis, Tennessee a year ago, they weren't sure what to expect. The so-called Ground Zero Mosque was kicking up controversy in New York. And in another Tennessee town, just 200 miles away, an Islamic Center's construction site was vandalized. That didn't happen to the Memphis Islamic Center. In fact, when the mosque wasn't ready in time for the holy month of Ramadan, a Christian church down the street opened its doors and said, "Pray here." A few days ago, I caught up with Donna Siddiqui of the Islamic Center and Steve Stone, the pastor of Heartsong Church. And Steve said this unusual alliance between them began with a sign he put up out by the road.
It said, "Welcome to the neighborhood, Memphis Islamic Center." It's been seen all over the world now.
Donish, what did you think when you saw that sign?
Well, obviously we were taken aback, but in a very positive way. You know, Muslims, we tend to think of ourselves as good neighbors, but Steve beat us to the punch and put up that sign, and all we had to do was knock on the door and introduce ourselves. So we were elated.
So, Donish, you got into a little bit of a pinch where your Islamic Center wasn't going to be ready in time for Ramadan, which is a really big deal because you need a place to pray during Ramadan.
Exactly. Yeah, we were looking at some close-by halls and rental places, and none of those things were available. And what we did was we approached Steve and Heartsong and asked if we could just borrow a small space in there. He said, "No, you're going to come in here and you're going to pray in the our main worship space." Not only did they let us use that every night, but they were there every night and greeted us every night as we came in. By the end of the month, I think it was a very sentimental moment.
We were so honored to be asked because we knew that if they ever had any thought that we would say no, they would not have asked. So we were honored that they asked us.
Steve, how did your members take it?
We had about 20 out of 550 that left us. Mm. We had tried to work with them and help them think their way through it. But at the end of the day, if they really believed what they said they believed, we're kind of glad they left because we didn't want them going out into the community and saying, "We have these hateful feelings and we go to Heartsong Church."
I feel like a lot of church leaders, you know, would say that they believe in having this kind of community and a sense of community. But you guys actually did it, and it's not happening in all that many places. I'm trying to figure out exactly what it was. Was it the two of you? I mean, was it just that you guys became friends, so you guys hit it off? Is that the magic?
I know. I think it was just more that, you know, one of the basic tenets of our faith is to love our neighbors. You know, Jesus only taught two things, and one of them is love your neighbors as you love yourself. And so it was just, it really was a no-brainer for us. This is what we've got to do. Now, how do we do it? That was the question.
Hmm. And you felt like all of your church members were behind you.
I felt like all but the 20 that left were behind us. Yes, absolutely. But we've forgiven them.
Some of the critics that, I mean, you got letters, calls from people all over the country commenting one way or the other on the situation. One of the criticisms that people leveled was that this was a blending of Christianity and Islam, and it wasn't appropriate. You know, how did you deal with that, Steve?
Well, we're sharing our faith. We're living out our faith, and they're doing exactly the same thing. It's easy to criticize something you don't know, and I'd say, well, if you knew our relationship, you would know that they're very clear that we are Jesus followers, and we're very clear that they are Muslims.
Yeah, certainly. Even though we have different faith traditions, we don't deny that, right? We believe very different things. But at the same time, we know that we can get along. We know that we can work together, and we have respect for one another because we are people of faith.
That's Danish Siddiqui, board member of the Memphis Islamic Center, and his good friend, Pastor Steve Stone of the Hartsong Church in Cordova, Tennessee. Guys, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure.
You may recall recently we reported on the so-called Chrislam, the alleged merging of Christianity and Islam for perhaps some type of one-world religion. And one of the folks we did report on was Jack Van Impe, who I believe I noted was someone I heard a lot in my own Southern Baptist fundamentalist upbringing. However, it's interesting that so many of the other kind of phony preachers who are mostly in it for the money, who usually get busted with boys or drugs or God knows what, Jack Van Impe kind of seems to have been, for the most part, right on. I'm not pitching my flag on his land or anything, but he quit his network after having been with them for decades because he called them out saying, you're trying to move toward one world religion. Oh, how I digress, my friends. Let's grab the final story on holyhexes.com, the story that was the breaking news on our last episode, 229, from August 19th. And that was one of those stories that we keep Google News open for. So when we see things like that, and it definitely, when we saw it, I said, oh my God. The West Memphis Three freed after 18 years. After alleged ritual murder of Cub Scouts. I almost said clubbed scouts. From BeliefNet, after almost two decades behind bars, a trio accused of the grisly murder of three Cub Scouts have been released. A district court judge released Damian W. Eccles, now 36, Jason Baldwin, now 34, and Jesse Miss Kelly Jr., now 36, collectively known as the West Memphis Three, WM3. This was done in a legal maneuver known as an Alford plea. It does not result in a full exoneration since some of the convictions stand. However, the trio did not admit guilt. They were serving time for killing three 8-year-old boys in a notorious 1993 murder case that included accusations of satanic rituals and involvement in Wicca. We'll read just a little bit about the Alford, that's A-L-F-O-R-D, plea. After we listen to a compilation of clips concerning West Memphis Three.
18 years, a long time behind bars, a long time on death row, a long time in and out of solitary, a long time for something that you insist you didn't do. Today, three men who were supposed to never walk free did just that. They were called the West Memphis Three, convicted of murdering three Cub Scouts in West Memphis, Arkansas in 1993, despite any physical evidence linking them to the crime. After years of fighting for freedom, they were released today in a very unusual plea deal. Aaron Moriarty of 48 Hours Mystery has been on this story for 4 years.
My name is Damian Nichols. I'm 36 years old and released today from death row for a crime I did not commit.
Arkansas death row inmate Damian Nichols got his life back today. As part of an unusual plea agreement, Nichols and two other convicted men, Jason Baldwin and Jesse Miskelly, were released from prison.
You know, this has been going on for over 18 years, and it's been an absolute living hell.
17 years ago, Damian Nichols was sentenced to death. The other two were given life. Jason Baldwin.
In the beginning, we told nothing but the truth that we were innocent, and they sent us to prison for the rest of our lives for it.
Three teenagers were taken into custody.
Known as the West Memphis Three, the men were teenagers in 1994 when they were convicted of killing 3 8-year-old boys in the town of West Memphis, Arkansas. Stevie Branch, Christopher Byers, and Michael Moore. Investigators in this rural community believe that the teenagers killed the children as part of a satanic ritual. In recent years, though, DNA evidence has been recovered at the scene, none of it linking the accused to the crime. Their freedom comes at a high price. Under the unusual agreement known as an Alford plea, the three men who still say they are innocent had to plead guilty to murder.
And the only thing that the state would do for us was to say, hey, we'll let you go, only if you commit guilt. And that's not justice, no matter how you look at it.
While the father of one of the victims voiced his support for the three men,
I'm glad that they're free.
Sir, would you have a seat, please?
Another had to be removed from the court after objecting to the deal.
This was not justice.
A deal that almost didn't happen. Jason Baldwin, who didn't initially want to make the plea, finally agreed to get Damian Nichols off death row.
I did not want to take the deal from the get-go. However, trying to kill Damian.
It's a really sad story and a surprising development, Scott.
Aaron, I wonder, why did the prosecutors go for this deal?
Well, the official state's position is that these men are guilty, but the prosecuting attorney today admitted that eventually these three men would have gotten new trials, and they were likely to be acquitted during those trials. So this, in some ways, was a face-saving move for the state.
Thank you, Aaron.
6 years ago, I sat with you on death row, and we talked about when this day would happen, and here it is. Can you describe what you are feeling in this moment?
Still very much in shock, still overwhelmed. You know, you kind of have to take into consideration that I've spent almost the past decade in absolute solitary confinement, so I'm not used to being around anyone, much less this many people. It's kind of overwhelming.
Damien, when the Alford plea, the judge said it was a plea he could not deal with on the confinement bench.
Right.
You have to say, of course, not that you're guilty of a crime that you profess to the judge that you do not commit.
Right.
Is this justice? Is this what you've been looking for?
It's not perfect. It's not perfect by any means, but at least it brings closure to some areas and some aspects. You know, we can still bring up new evidence. We can still continue the investigations we've been doing. We can still try to clear our names. The only difference is now we can do it from the outside instead of having to sit in prison and do it.
Jason, are any of you concerned about when you go out, there are some people who are still angry about this? Can you tell me about that?
Very much, yeah.
Why not? Why do you
think? I mean, I'm concerned. Because I mean, even when you're in prison, it goes on every day. You have to worry about your own safety. It don't matter what the crime it is, you still got to worry about your safety regardless.
Jason, how about you?
I can't worry about what someone else may do. I just have to, you know, stay around the people I love and who love me and care about me and, you know, just trust. Can't live our lives in fear. And as far as your question earlier, Damian, this was not justice, you know. In the beginning, we told nothing but the truth that we were innocent, and they sent us to prison for the rest of our lives for it. And then we had to come here, and the only thing that the state would do for us was to say, hey, we'll let you go, only if you admit guilt. And that's not justice, no matter how you look at it. They're not out there trying to find who really murdered those boys. And I did not want to take the deal from the get-go. However, they're trying to kill Damian. And sometimes you just got to fight down to save somebody.
The deal came 5 months before a scheduled hearing was held to determine whether the accused should be granted a new trial in light of DNA evidence that surfaced in the past few years implicating an unnamed fourth suspect. None of the trio's DNA has been found in tests of evidence at the scene. The Arkansas Supreme Court ordered the new hearing, giving new life to efforts to exonerate them. The case has been the subject of three HBO documentary films claiming their innocence. The case was profiled by Joe Berlinger and Bruce Sinofsky's 1996 documentary Paradise Lost, The Child Murders at Robin Hood Hills, and the 2003 sequel Paradise Lost 2, Revelations, both of which cast significant doubt on their part in the murders. Both films aired on the cable movie channel HBO. The filmmakers have produced a third installment, Paradise Lost 3, Purgatory, scheduled for release next January. The filmmakers were at the Jonesboro, Arkansas hearing at which the three were released. The HBO documentary sparked a nationwide movement urging authorities to re-examine the convictions. Many celebrities also got involved, including movie actors Johnny Depp and Winona Ryder, members of the rock band Metallica, Pearl Jam lead singer Eddie Vedder, and singer Natalie Maines of the Dixie Chicks. More on that from ChristianScienceMonitor.com, getting into the cause célèbre of WM3. It was disclosed Friday, August 19th, that Academy Award-winning Lord of the Rings director Peter Jackson and his production partner Fran Walsh had quietly funded ongoing investigative efforts for the past 7 years. With the release, Eccles became the highest-profile death row inmate to be released in recent memory, reported Campbell Robertson in the New York Times. Numerous links added in this story again, originally from BeliefNet.com. West Memphis 3 freed 18 years after alleged ritual murder of Cub Scouts. And you may recall this came in an era of what some may recall as a satanic panic. In the waves surrounding that. Briefly, an Alford plea, also called a Kennedy plea, in the United States is a guilty plea in a criminal court where the defendant does not admit the act and asserts innocence. Under the Alford plea, the defendant admits that sufficient evidence exists with which the prosecution could likely convince a judge or jury to find the defendant guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. You get that? This sources back to the 1970 case, North Carolina v. Alford. And you can, of course, just go to Wikipedia and check it out. And flesh it out from there. We are now into hour number two of this B-side episode 229 from Media Monarchy. It's September 2nd, 2011. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, broadcasting live to you right now on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, zeropointradio.com, and revereradio.net. Huge thanks to all the outlets that help support this show. We're calling this a B-side because we weren't really sure if we had all our ducks in a row, as it were, going on vacation, only being back in town for about 36 hours, feeling a little lagging. But it looks like we're going to go the distance here, my friends, as we move to the flagship site, MediaMonarchy.com, and begin with what we just called the August News Purge. Is that all there is? This News Purge is a list of headlines. Again, going back to towards the end of August, as this is not going to be a huge, comprehensive, up-to-date show, we're just trying to play catch-up, as so many things move so quickly. We begin with our 9/11 updates, because I believe there's an anniversary coming up soon. An interesting rundown from the Deutsche Press agency, the chronology of major terrorist attacks since 9/11, and even more important, however, from whowhatwhy.com, that would be Russ Baker's investigative site, who and what are behind the official story and official history of the Bin Laden raid, carried out on a high, holy, occult day with no evidence to show for it, and a cleanup operation just a few weeks later, getting rid of and silencing those who may have been involved in yet another mass psychological operation, with crowds cheering in the White House lawn. Those are our two brief 9/11 updates. Of course, next week's episode, September 9th, 9/9/11 for episode 230. We will be, of course, going over the catalyzing catastrophic event. But let's go through our BioWars EnviroHealth updates from the indispensable energy news, enenews.com. Fukushima mom comes to Portland, Oregon because her 10-year-old son started having symptoms, nose bleeding, and fevers. As the nuclear nightmare continues, China says radioactive contamination spreads far beyond Japan's claims in the Pacific waters. Meanwhile, U.S. uses global warming to lay claim to 200,000 square miles of Arctic waters. That comes from allgov.com. However, they will make no reference to Agenda 21. Guardian forced to correct bizarre climate change alien story. You recall that one? If we don't clean up our atmosphere, aliens are going to have to come and kill us. More on that from James Corbett's ClimateGate.tv. Alabama nuclear plant wins their go-ahead after a 23-year delay. $9 billion disaster so far this year. That would be $9 billion disasters this year. The Central East Groundhog Day blizzard killed 36, lost $2 billion. The Midwest Southeast tornadoes, 9 dead, $2 billion. Southeast Midwest tornadoes, $2 billion. Midwest Southeast tornadoes, 38 killed, $2 billion lost. More tornadoes, Southeast Ohio Valley, Midwest, getting into April 25th through the 30th, 327 killed, $9 billion lost. Tornadoes around May 22nd to the 27th, 177 deaths, a loss of $7 billion. Southern Plains, Southwest drought, heat waves, all spring and summer, wildfires, $5 billion plus lost. Mississippi River flooding, 2 killed, $4 billion lost. And upper Midwest flooding through the summer, $2 billion loss. And it will continue. The agenda will continue. Biden tells the Chinese he's, quote, not second-guessing, end quote, their one-child policy, of course, talked into by the connected front men working for the interlocking interbred families and foundations and organizations, Kissinger and Poppy Bush. And as we mentioned, just hours before I was to fly to my home state of West Virginia, there was an earthquake, a 5.9, which is no laughing matter. I talked to my great friend and I got to see so many good friends. But a friend who works in D.C. said, man, it was no small thing. I bolted out of the room, out of the building, as crap was falling over. And it's interesting, as I was, again, visiting family and watching the nonstop 24/7 threadaganda as Hurricane Irene approached. But as the earthquake hit, it was a laughing matter, as jaded West Coast chuckles over the East Coast quake.
We've been talking about the East Coast earthquake a lot this morning, obviously. Yes. Big story of the day. We've been giving it its proper due. But now we're going to have a little bit of fun with it, because, you know, it seems like a lot of people out there are having fun with this story.
And we, on the West Coast.
On the West Coast.
Think, well, over here, yeah.
We didn't want to miss out. So, you know, we want to share with you some of the pictures of the outrageous damage caused by this earthquake.
Well, here.
This is a picture
from
Mill Run, Virginia.
Look at that.
Devastating.
My good
devastating.
Lord.
Moving on to this one from Wakefield, Massachusetts.
Oh.
Yogurt cup, it falls over so easily.
You need some tissues, man.
This next one from somewhere in Connecticut is just devastating.
Oh, my God. Post-it note fell in the car.
Oh my God. I mean, how are we going to recover? But this is my favorite picture.
This says it all.
Says it all.
Yes.
We will rebuild, people. We will come back from this devastation. This will not keep us down.
Facebook, Twitter reported record earthquake messages. Facebook and Twitter proved to be a key source of info during and after last Tuesday's East Coast earthquake, two Tuesdays ago now, my friends, as cell phone networks struggled with congestion from an overwhelming number of callers. The earthquake hit at 1:51 p.m., according to USGS, and just 4 minutes later, Facebook said the term earthquake appeared in the status updates of 3 million users. Twitter lit up with questions, on-the-ground descriptions of the 5.8 magnitude quake, and messages to family and friends. Within a minute of the quake, there were more than 40,000 earthquake-related tweets. The microblogging site said it had hit about 5,500 tweets per second on the quake, which is more than Osama bin Laden's death in May, and on par with tweets related to the Japanese quake in March. Some reported on Twitter and Facebook that they learned about the quake on the websites before they felt it. Earthquake was the number one trending word on Twitter across the East Coast Tuesday, including Richmond, the District, Raleigh, Boston, Providence, NYC, Philly, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and more. And the Post Tech blog gives an update on the disruption to cell phone service. Why does this best the Osama PSYOP? Because the Osama PSYOP broke late in the evening. I learned about it at just after 8 o'clock on May Day here on the West Coast. So, of course, East Coast was asleep. For this quake, the East Coast was awake, and that's why the messages beat it. However, again, as we watch the weather wars swirl and swirl around, and as we see everybody heard it on all the social networking sites, anything can be amplified massively in the echo chamber, just like, I don't know how many people I heard from going, oh, did you see the funny pictures of their yogurt cup falling over? And we do have one story that is now old, as it was all building, posted to this end of August news purge. Hurricane Irene strengthens, plods towards U.S. And I believe what seemed to really happen is that the places who thought they were going to get it didn't, and the places who weren't really prepped really got hit hard, and it looked like Vermont was destroyed. So hopefully anybody, everybody out there in whatever kind of world, crazy-ass weather war, engineered or natural, wherever you may be, man-made or sinister forces, stay safe. That's my quick sidebar to you. We'll reference it when we go through all our other tweets at the end of the show. But as long as we're discussing the hurricanes and the tropical storms as everything heats up, like I said, I saw a bunch of the threadaganda. It was on nonstop as people were kind of freaking about it. The fascinating thing about it, and again, this is what it's all about, is having some type of media literacy. On the CNN nonstop Hurricane Irene threadaganda, on the graphics, you know how all the news graphics go. You know, there's always all the little swirly stuff in the background and the things going on as they do the picture-in-picture and the crawler and all the stuff as your eyes struggle to maintain any kind of sense of focus as they're blitzing you with chunks of information. The background they were using was a lightning strike, a CG bit of lightning strike. So as you're watching these images, there is a strobe-like lightning effect hitting your eyes, amping up the hysteria. Let's continue through the August news purge as we hit the drug war. Retired NYPD officer and legend known in the famous Al Pacino film Serpico, Frank Serpico, was on InfoWars just recently, and there's about an hour-long video noting that, of course, rightly, the American drug war is a lie, just like 9/11. The other related drug war note, Dennis Kucinich made a surprise appearance at a Seattle rally for marijuana activists. That whole 15-minute video is there for you to check out. Moving on to EconoCrash, Moody's analyst breaks silence, says the ratings agency is rotten to the core with conflicts. More on that from BusinessInsider.com. An exclusive from thinkprogress.org, a Goldman Sachs VP changed his name. Now he advances Goldman Sachs lobbying interests as a top staffer to Representative Daryl Issa. Bank of America layoffs are the latest as an industry shrinks. And finally, on EconoCrash, open mic catches Bank of America official vowing to help Rick Perry.
Bank of America, we will help you out.
Did you catch that?
Bank of America, we will help you out.
There's a lot of noise and it goes on, and I'm sure the guy has been identified, and you can get more updated on that story from Raw Story. But it shouldn't be a surprise. Any of the phony front runners are intimately connected. It doesn't matter which fake party alliance they align themselves with or what allegiance, an R or a D. It's all the same. And as long as we keep playing that game, they'll keep winning. Rick Perry, Michelle Bachmann, and Mitt Romney are the front runners. Number ones, three, and four. That's the top three. Moving down the news purge to geopolitics, American hikers get stiff sentences in Iran. More on that from the Christian Science Monitor. AllGov.com provides another Who Is breakdown, this time on the ambassador to Israel. Who is Dan Shapiro? Terror wins again. The King of Norway calls for, quote, police in the streets, controls and exercises. More on that from blacklistednews.com. Our last geopolitical note, Sri Lanka deploys a military to quell unrest over strange urban legend. The Grease Devil. You can get more on that story from stratrisks.com, which I just discovered was started by Michael Vail, connected to blacklistednews.com. Two notes on history mystery from the Telegraph. The new Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial, unveiled in the District of Criminals, was, of course, made in China. You can't make it up, folks. The other history mystery note, geologists may have found the oldest known fossil. More on that from Digital Trends. On to the media and the memes, rarities in streaming video on Netflix Instant and Hulu Plus. The piece from the New York Times has a much sexier headline, Streaming Video's Emerging Bounty. Getting into what really excites me is that you can essentially watch some of the greatest films ever made, not just U.S., but internationally, and they're all at a press of a button away. And those are the kind of things that hopefully we're going to get further into on the nascent and still growing and burgeoning NavigatingNetflix.com. Kate Winslet escapes fire at Richard Branson's luxury island retreat. That's from The Guardian. Corporate interests threaten children's welfare. That is an op-ed on the New York Times. The kids aren't all right. And we end our media memes with two obituaries, both of songwriting duos with a huge laundry list of hits through the decades. Nick Ashford of Ashford & Simpson dies at the age of 70, and we give you a link to just one of their songs. They're more known for writing songs for other people, but the video I provide for you is Ashford & Simpson singing their self-penned hit, Ain't No Mountain High Enough. However, the other songwriting death is perhaps a bit larger. Jerry Lieber, rock and roll lyricist, dies at the age of 78, and we just give you the brief New York Times obituary rundown. But what we want to listen to help flesh this out, and I implore you to go check out the list of songs. It's amazing. It also reminds me, I was reading, as you'll kind of read anything you can get your hands on as you're waiting hours and hours and hours in an airport in a layover at O'Hare Airport in Chicago the other day. A sad and interesting piece on Glen Campbell in the new Rolling Stone about essentially he's failing and losing to Alzheimer's. He made one last album collaborating with all kinds of folks. But he was a member of what was called the Wrecking Crew, and he played on an unbelievable amount of songs. Maybe we'll have to go into that at some point. But right now we're talking about Lieber and Stoller. Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller.
Over half a century ago, Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller began writing songs. Many became standards of a new type of music called rock and roll.
When the night has come and the land is dark.
The two creative people coming from different backgrounds, different schools, and into one pot. And they're in there bubbling all the time. They're great.
With the Drifters, soul music was rarely sweeter. And with the Coasters, rock music was never funnier.
Take out the papers and the trash!
Me and Mr. were writing that type of stuff that white kids and black kids like.
Jerry and Mike was so brilliant with chance-taking and stepping into new territories and don't give a damn about who think about it. Go for it. Pow, there you are.
I held my nose, I closed my eyes, I took a drink.
As songwriters, their forte was rhythm and blues. They wrote some of the most authentic rhythm and blues that white Jewish guys ever wrote.
One, two,
Amazing groove makers. The most simple, basic lines that Mike wrote, I didn't appreciate until much later.
Born through a party in the county jail. Prison bands there, they began to wail.
Jerry Lee and Mike Stone were the most exciting producers I have ever seen on stage.
And I won't pretend I'm a star on Broadway.
I think for us, they were definitely that one step ahead that we always looked at and went, look at that, we should go that way. They were really trailblazers.
So darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Oh, stand. Stand by me. Stand by me.
Did you ever doubt yourself at the time?
I didn't. He never doubted anything. I doubted everything.
He kept me from doing very foolish things, and I kept him motivated.
We're in Sunnyside. Over there is a grocery. We used to get bagels and lox and cream cheese there. I first heard somebody play Boogie Woogie, played by a black teenager at camp. I tried to do it because I loved it.
By 15, Mike Stoller was having piano lessons with jazz legend James P. Johnson and hanging around the clubs on New York's 52nd Street.
My mother and I came to California from Baltimore, Maryland in 1945 on a Greyhound bus.
At 13, Jerry Lieber had wanted to be an actor. Sneaking onto the back lot at Paramount Pictures, he solicited advice from director Cecil B. DeMille, who told him to study gymnastics, bodybuilding, and fencing.
Downtown at Clifton's cafeteria, I got a job as a busboy on the night shift at this incredible Filipino short order chef. He'd have the R&B stations on all night long. And I remember walking by, and it was a record by Jimmy Witherspoon. It stopped me in my tracks, and I thought to myself, I can do that.
Ain't nobody's business if I do.
At 16, Mike Stoller moved to L.A., where he played in a Latino dance band. Someone gave his name to a boy from Fairfax High who wanted to write songs.
There was a ringing on the doorbell, and there stood Jerome Lieber, as he had introduced himself to me, and I'm looking at one brown eye, one blue eye, and I forgot to ask him to come in. I was just staring at him.
My pantry's empty. I ain't eating for a week.
And he said, well, I have some of my lyrics here. I said, let me see them. I said, hey, wait a minute, these are 12-bar blues, because that I was familiar with. He started to sing, and I started to play, and we decided that we would be songwriters.
Hard time. Ooh, I feel so bad.
We'd both be puffing away on cigarettes, and Jerry would pace around the room shouting. And I would be jamming at the piano.
I lost everything I had.
Lieber and Stoller built up a reputation writing blues songs for artists like Jimmy Witherspoon, Charles Brown, Ray Charles, and Willie Mae Thornton, also known as Big Mama.
Hound Dog was actually written and inspired by Big Mama's physical self and her demeanor. It seemed very tough and salty and angry.
I just want to let everybody know all about it. You ain't nothing but a we
she opened her mouth to do Hound Dog, that was something you had to see and believe.
Not just made it really in our image. I mean, that's the record we wanted, and we got it. And we got it to the bricks. I think it was one take. We were thrilled. And I don't remember being thrilled too many times in the 50 years we've been in this business. But that was thrilling.
And that gave us the validation that we needed, because we knew that we had made that record, even though we didn't get credit for producing
it.
And of course, Hound Dog would go on to become even more famous, as that's just the first 7 minutes of the 45-minute documentary, which we link up for you that you can watch, about the legendary songwriting duo Lieber and Stoller as Jerry Lieber, rock and roll lyricist, dies at the age of 78. We move down the news purge list to a couple notes of murder and mayhem in California, a second episode of fan violence, noting the wave of copycat effect Jockorama-related outbursts, which reminds us of something we don't have posted up, which relates back to our rock and roll discussions, of the wave of concert stage collapses recently. We have reported for you even before the large Indiana stage collapse of the band Sugarland, and then even the deaths that also happened in Belgium at the Puckle Pop Festival, was preceded by a stage collapse in Ottawa of Cheap Trick, and there have been even more, I believe, related to the Flaming Lips in their home state of Oklahoma. This doesn't happen, and even has people like Nico Case tweeting for her road dogs to stay safe out there. The other murder and mayhem note, there is a video for you if you want to see it. Wing Walker falls to his death at a Michigan air show. On to our Obamasiah updates. Judge orders White House to publish visitor logs. That's from allgov.com. And a video for you from Raw Replay as Sheriff Joe Arpaio probing the Obama birth certificate, quote-unquote, evidence. And always remember that the birther meme was started by Democrats opposed to Obama. They were pro-Hillary, started by Phil Berg, a lawyer from Pennsylvania, running ObamaCrimes.com. The last note on Obamasiah updates, as the emotional con game heats up for election 2012 at a recent event, someone asked a quick question to the Honorable Dr. Ron Paul.
I have a quick question while you're saying that. Do you think Americans are justified in thinking that H.R. 645 could lead to detainment camps for American citizens during martial law?
I don't know this number, Joe. Have to tell me.
The emergency center establishment.
Yeah, I know that's their goal. They are setting up the stage for violence in this country. No doubt about it.
Yep. They are setting the stage for violence in this country. It's being engineered. Economically, religiously, socially, educationally, medially. But the other note is from the Los Angeles Times. Ron Paul's birthday money bomb netted $1.6 million in a 24-hour period. But we move into our police state updates, which actually the setting the stage for violence with the Incarceration Detention Centers Act that was asked to Ron Paul. That's the lead update on police state updates, but below that, Taze from above, new robot copter to begin patrolling our skies. This comes from SingularityHub.com, and it gets into the UAVs, that's the unmanned aerial vehicles, and the X-47B, that mysterious ship. But it also gets into the Shadow Hawk, and you can even watch a video from Texas-based Vanguard Defense Industries. Meanwhile, soldiers participate in Vibrant 12, the CBRN attack exercise. That's chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear attack drill. More on that from BioPrepWatch.com. OpenMediaBoston.org noting that Boston is not a military training ground, as it has been turned into that by the private military contractors running psychological operations on soldiers and civilians alike to accept tanks rolling down their streets. And our last police state update note, U.S. Air Force leads the raid on a Las Vegas gun shop. More on that from Cryptagon. Couple of war horrors updates. U.S. troops may stay in Afghanistan until 2024. That, surprise, surprise, comes from The Telegraph. And The Register reporting Afghan coppers trained with Playmobil. And you got to see it to believe it. Finally, at the bottom of the news purge, we reach West Virginia worry. First note from WVMetroNews.com, the West Virginia House passes a redistricting bill. Gerrymandering? Question mark. And the final note of West Virginia worry was posted yesterday to the front of that main source of pop culture news, as so many folks do have Yahoo email accounts. They posted an article yesterday on September 1st, the day I got back from visiting my home state of West Virginia, 10 coolest small towns in America. The winners in a 6th annual celebration of great hometown escapes may be short on people but long on personality, provided by Budget Travel to Yahoo Travel. And number 10 is Greenburg, Kansas. Number 9 is Ripon, Wisconsin. Number 8, Cedar Key, Florida. Number 7, Newtown Borough, Pennsylvania. Number 6, Phoenicia, New York. Number 5, LaPointe, Wisconsin. Number 4, Eureka Springs, Arkansas. Number 3, Clayton, New York. Number 2, Astoria, Oregon, just up the road from me. And number 1, Lewisburg, West Virginia. Now, I'm originally from Fayetteville, West Virginia, but Lewisburg is just a mere hour away. And we'll give the rundown for you, and thanks to the folks who did send me this article and say, hey, check out number 1 on the list. A small town's usually lucky if there's a decent one-screen movie theater, maybe even a community dance troupe. But a Carnegie Hall? This speck on the map in the Greenbrier River Valley lays claim to one of only 4 in the world. The 1902 building now serves as Lewisburg's creative control tower, attracting an unlikely band of artistic characters back to the land types and retirees. Gene and Michael Christie embody Lewisburg's blend. The duo run the Davenport House B&B, where guests can bottle feed one of the property's baby lambs after taking coffee and breakfast on the private patio. Michael's a painter whose work is shown in New York City's Horn Ashby Gallery, and Gene is the former director of a front office operations at the Greenbrier Hotel, 10 miles down the road. You know, you always think of the ideal American town where the kids are safe, the streets are clean. We have that. But we also have Wynton Marsalis coming through town, says Gene, who'd just finished a morning shearing of the sheep. Lewisburg, West Virginia, with a population of 3,830, topping the list of the 10 coolest small towns in America. And yes, I am proud to be born and raised West Virginia boy. Yes, I got away, but I never regret where I came from. And again, being on vacation there in southern West Virginia over the last week was amazing and helped kind of refuel my soul, as we're still kind of jet lagging here on this B-side episode 229 from Media Monarchy. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Just below that, 10 coolest small towns, with Lewisburg, West Virginia topping the list. Right below that, you'll see my posting about Media Monarchy goes on vacation, took a week off for some much-needed rest and relaxation. I continue to update the Twitter feeds at Media Monarchy and at Navigate Netflix, and we'll go down the list of those in just a few minutes with all the other things that aren't posted to the main site, but that I tweeted standing out in my parents' front yard in the middle of the night. We also provided links to the Never Stopping Cyberspace War and Holy Hexes, thanks to my man Alan in Omaha. And hell, while you're at it, we even invited you to check out our Tumblr page, mediamonarchy.tumblr.com, as we generally sign up for any of the bells and whistles and social networking tools, if for nothing else, to ensure that we get Media Monarchy. Let's grab our few other posts on MediaMonarchy.com. Posted Tuesday, August 23rd from The Guardian. Sexual assault charges against ex-IMF chief dismissed. Dominique Strauss-Kahn walks free from a New York court. DSK, one of France's leading politicians, walked free from a New York courtroom after a judge ordered the dropping of sexual assault charges against him for allegedly attacking a hotel maid. Was this an Alford plea? The move could resurrect his seemingly dead political career in France and almost brings an end to the dramatic legal tussle that has gripped both sides of the Atlantic. The judge, Michael Obus, told the packed court he would comply with a request from the prosecution to throw the case out. The indictment is dismissed.
French voters have been reacting to the latest dramatic twist in the case against Dominique Strauss-Kahn. Those interviewed on the streets of Paris believe he has no chance of making a dramatic comeback to the French presidential race. This woman said everyone was against the hotel mate from the start. We saw DSK handcuffed and that created a scandal here, she said. But I think something clearly went on. This whole case has lifted the lid on DSK's personality. Whatever the judgment says, he'll never be able to stage a political comeback. He'll never be president of France and will not be a candidate at the next elections. Maybe he could be a future minister if the socialists win. France's Socialist Party has hailed the collapse of the case against their former favourite for next year's presidential elections. But opinion polls suggest two-thirds of French people now believe DSK should stay out of the race.
Posted below this story, we also provide a couple flashback links for you, like the May 19th episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com, where we go over the Wrath of Khan and also some exploding watermelons. The original posting of this story going back to May of this year on Media Monarchy. Markets go wild after IMF head Khan arrested for sexual assault. And we'll continue to cast our eyes abroad as order out of chaos attempting to emerge as the Libyan operation reaches its endgame. And remember, my friends, the Libyan rebels are al-Qaeda murderers. With a flashback to the Telegraph for you. Let's get the precise date so you can look this up. March 25th, 2011. The Telegraph. Libyan rebel commander admits his fighters have al-Qaeda links. But we'll take the breakdown from the intelhub.com as the corporate media is ablaze with reports that the Libyan rebels are set to take Tripoli from Gaddafi. It's important to remember that these rebels are not freedom fighters. Rather, they are CIA-run, al-Qaeda-connected murderers. This so-called liberation of Libya is the exact opposite of what the corporate media is actually reporting. NATO and the Libyan rebels have killed thousands of civilians, while at the same time the corporate-controlled media pretends we're fighting for human rights. The coverage, with a link to FAIR.org, that is currently taking place in Libya is nothing less than pure propaganda ordered up by the CIA and NATO as support for this latest illegal war hits new lows. As the corporate media continue to try to make the Americans believe that former CIA agents and four-star generals are somehow not at all biased, the fact remains that this war is illegal, has killed thousands, and has been in support of al-Qaeda. We have several related developing updates on this grand chessboard scene as the battle for Libya is almost over, as is the battle for its 144 tons of gold. More on that from the always indispensable ZeroHedge.com. And our first of two clips getting into this from Russia today, as F. William Ingdahl notes that Western countries fighting for Libya's oil fields like piranhas.
On the future for a post-Gaddafi Libya and the interest of various factions having it, I'm now joined by F. William Ingdahl, author of Full Spectrum Dominance, Totalitarian Democracy and the New World Order, live from Frankfurt. Thank you for joining us today. So the Transitional National Council has been billed as everything from a grassroots democratic movement fighting for freedom to a loose mob of armed men fighting for power. In your opinion, just what is the transitional government, the TNC?
Well, what we have going on in Libya for some months now
is a major effort by U.S. and NATO forces to pour at least $1 billion, by best estimates, into the so-called Transitional National Council. It's a rival tribal clan warfare that's going on in Libya. This is not a democracy movement in any stretch of the imagination. It's simply an insurgency being supported covertly by U.S.-financed arms shipments into the rebels, and in order to simply carve up the oil fields and get it into Western hands rather than in Libyan state hands, which Gaddafi held firmly to. That's, I think, the real underlying issue in this whole NATO bombing of Libya.
So rival, tribal, internal warfare. But what's going on now in Libya? We now have a capital city full of armed men crying victory. What's next?
Well, I think we're going to face, if they do succeed, and it looks in all likelihood with the full power of NATO and all the insurgency being supported by U.S. and NATO covert intelligence, that they are eventually going to topple Gaddafi. And I think what Libya is going to face after that is a period of prolonged chaos. Nobody knows the outcome. This is, as I said at the beginning, this is tribe against tribe. This is not democracy against totalitarianism. So what emerges from that, I think it suits some of the Western oil interests, especially the British and the French, who are fighting like piranhas over grabbing the most juicy oil fields for them, for their own companies. It suits them to have chaos, because then they can control the terms of oil exploitation much better.
Now, recently, Western governments unlocked some of Gaddafi's frozen reserves to fund the rebels. But where is the money going? Will they spend it on infrastructure that's been destroyed during the conflict, or is it just going to be lining their pockets?
Well, this is what nobody can predict. I mean, these are not, for the most part, people schooled in democracy over generations. These are, as I say, just people who've been promised the control of the oil in return for making an armed revolution against the established government of Libya. So, you know, NATO is doing this under a manipulation of the Gulf Cooperation Council several months ago, where Saudi Arabia got a deal with Washington on controlling Bahrain from revolt, in return for which Saudi arm-twisted the GCC members to give this apparent support for a UN intervention, military intervention by NATO. And ever since then, it's been the most brazen violation of international law that we've seen. It's incredible to me that the international media doesn't debate some of the legal aspects of this, regardless of whether Gaddafi's a good guy or bad guy. This is a precedent that is going to be used time and time again, no matter who.
Well, you mentioned Gaddafi. He's nowhere to be found. What do you think he could be planning for his next step?
I have absolutely no idea what he's planning. He has such strong support from the population for one simple reason, I think, and that is for 41-some years, he has taken care with the oil revenues of Libya to provide clean water for the population, to provide schools, to provide virtually free medical care. The education and literacy levels have risen to almost 93% in the country compared with 40 years ago. So the population wasn't a bitter, grumbling population with discontent as you had in Tunisia. It's quite different. So Gaddafi commanded significant loyalty, especially on the tribal basis. But now it's all up for grabs, I think.
So Gaddafi, over the years, with the profits and money made from the oil revenues, spent lots of money on infrastructure, as you were saying, education, transportation, the medical industry as well. Could we expect a similar show of support to the people from the next transitional government, do you think?
Well, look at what we've seen already from the members of the transitional government. They're not only infighting, they're killing one another. This is just brutal power grab by greedy groups that see a chance to get a chunk of the action. So I don't think we can expect anything positive unless there's a dramatic change of personnel and events.
All right, F. William Engdahl, author of Full Spectrum Dominance, Totalitarian Democracy in the New World Order.
Let's get our related geopolitical updates surrounding the Libyan operation. Continuing down the update list of the Grand Chessboard, head of Libyan security services calls out NATO for supporting al-Qaeda. That is from the IntelHub.com. NATO slaughter in Tripoli on Tarpley.net. Operation Siren signals assault by rebels al-Qaeda death squads. Again, these Libyan rebels are al-Qaeda. So every time you read Libyan rebels, just see it as al-Qaeda. Rebel hacker sees Libyan domain name registry. That's from the register.co.uk. AllGov.com getting into dictator of the month, Muammar al-Gaddafi of Libya. And you may recall when we interviewed David Walachinsky, the editor-in-chief of AllGov.com, he has published a book on the most infamous dictators of the world. Independent reports indicate at least 1,300 civilians killed, 5,000 wounded in Libya on a single day. Journalist, prominent activist Franklin Lamb shot in Libya. That's from the IntelHub.com, and we ask, was it after he published this article? Will Obama pull the plug on Libya to score re-election? Both of those posted and reposted to the Intel Hub. Globalist Council on Foreign Relations President Richard N. Haass calls for the NATO occupation of Libya. Gaddafi's fall would be win for the vacationing Obama. NATO hands terrorists who killed U.S. troops control of Libya. U.S. and NATO officials openly admit to arming, training Libyan rebels, forcing a quote-unquote regime change. And the second clip from Russia Today on our Grand Chessboard updates, NATO wants bloodbath in Tripoli as journalists threatened and shot at.
And the breaking news, rebels have reportedly entered Tripoli from the west as fighting in Libya appears to be intensifying. Some estimates put the death toll from this weekend alone in the hundreds, with around 1,000 injured. It's also believed that major clashes have seen the rebels capture the capital's Mitiga airbase. Opposition forces also claim to have freed prisoners locked up during the uprising against Colonel Gaddafi's regime. Let's get more reaction on the ground now. Across to Marin Nazim Roya, he's in Tripoli, and she's from the Center for Research on Globalization. Madi, thanks for being on the line with us. How would you describe what's happening in Tripoli at the moment?
There are targeted attacks, Kevin. They're specifically targeting the areas where international journalists are to feed panic here. NATO has done all the heavy work. This is a NATO war. Make no mistake, this is a NATO war. They heavily bombed cities west of here. They bombed all night without even 10 seconds of stopping. They bombed this entire city. NATO landed the insurgents onto the coast of Tripoli. They have no respect for the international press. I was putting up a sign on the hotel, on top of the hotel. I took the initiative to do that and write press, and snipers shot at me. I beg the international community, the real international community, the international community of the people, not the governments within the NATO alliance, to stop this bloodshed and to get NATO to stop supporting this horrific attack in Tripoli. Make no mistake, this is part of the same war that is being engaged in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and in Pakistan and other parts of the world. This is part of the same front, and NATO has bombed mercilessly in this country and massacred innocent civilians.
Now, Colonel Gaddafi's asked people to take up arms and defend Tripoli from the rebels. How likely is that, do you think, to bring about a strong response? Are people prepared to lay down their lives to save his regime? What is the strength of feeling behind him?
Let me tell you, Kevin, quite frankly, that I was told right now, I can't confirm it, but I was told, and a lot of the Libyans feel happy, that people are amassing in Green Square and other parts of the city, taking up arms and ready to fight to defend this nation. I don't know how it'll play out. There was a huge, intense psychological war here that has hurt the war effort. The media has been deliberately involved here. And since I'm on the topic of the media, one of my French colleagues was told by a producer by CNN, because we're waiting to be rescued, was told by a producer by CNN, that now you're going to suffer the consequences of your actions. Because he opposes the war again, the NATO war. This was a threat. This is unacceptable. CNN should answer for this type of behavior.
Okay, well, we can't comment on what's happening on another channel, but we're taking what you say there. And as the situation in the Libyan capital is obviously intensifying tonight, I mean, the details are still sketchy that are coming in. A lot of this has to be verified. A number of world leaders, meantime, have again demanded that Gaddafi steps down. What other international reaction can we expect, you think, now? Do you think he will step down at the last moment, at the 11th hour?
Absolutely not. He's not going to step down. Why is this war? This war is not about Colonel Gaddafi. Colonel Gaddafi is just the pretext of this war. This war has nothing to do with Colonel Gaddafi. It has to do with stealing money from the Libyan people. That's what it has to be. Colonel Gaddafi, it could be the Prophet Mohammed or the Prophet Jesus or the Pope that's in charge of this country. They'll still demonize him. They'll still demonize him. I'll tell you, they have no respect for us here. NATO has to stop this war. NATO has deliberately broke the arms embargo against this country. NATO has deliberately put weapons here, the French, Qatar, Why is this going on? Where is this real international community of the people? Listen, Western Europe, the United States, Turkey, Canada are not the international community. I ask governments around the world to intervene and get this to stop, because there's going to be a bloodbath here, and this is exactly what NATO wants.
Marty, briefly, just listening in while you were talking there, I could hear gunshot. That gunshot was coming from close to you, was it? That was coming from nearby.
They're attacking our hotel. They're attacking where the international media is. They tried to shoot at me earlier today, sniper fire. I was almost grazed by sniper fire when I was on the roof putting, I had to take ketchup and write on a handkerchief, a bed sheet press, and I had to put them on the roof here.
Our last update on the geopolitical spectrum, just after that clip you heard, NATO wants bloodbath in Tripoli as journalists threatened and shot at. We have a link to the Obama speech that was given on, I believe, August 22nd or 23rd concerning the Libyan operation. That closes out that post. As we make a quick reference to episode 196 from the amazing CorberReport.com asking the question, where were they on 9/11? The question's simple, but the answers are surprising. Episode 196 delves into the whereabouts and actions of some of the key players on 9/11, getting into some previously produced videos that are on youtube.com/CorberReport. Where was Cheney? Where was Rumsfeld? Where was Bush? Where was Moore on 9/11? The other related, updated, latest Corber Report videos and interviews, the last word on Utopia, Unthinkable Times, Syrian Military Intervention on the Table, the latest appearance that I have posted of James Corbett on Russia Today, and also interview number 362 with Eric Schein. However, when I got home after being on vacation and updated my podcatcher, it blew up with all the amazing work coming out from CorberReport.com leading up to the 10th anniversary of the Catalyzing Catastrophic Event. Interviews, Kevin Ryan, tons of folks, so much more leading up to the amazing anniversary coverage from hardest working man in alternative media, climbing and rising and reaching more and more folks. Huge thanks and hat tip to James Corbett. And again, it's humbling just to be connected to all these amazing folks in the alternative media. Our last posted story on MediaMonarchy.com lightens the load just a touch. San Antonio radio station to debut artificially intelligent robot DJ. A San Antonio radio station's putting artificial intelligence behind the microphone. Denise, a computer program that can give the weather, play music, and even tell jokes, takes to the airwaves and now has taken to the airwaves on KROV. In San Antonio, Texas, KROVFM.com. Denise does need help from a scriptwriter, but at a cost of $200 is a lot cheaper than hiring a full-time human, says Dominique Garcia, the radio personality who bought and programmed Denise. A lot of radio DJs are pretty upset with me because it does work, Garcia told MSNBC's John Roach. Denise can't fill airspace by herself and sounds a tad robotic, Garcia acknowledges, but she also won't stick her foot in her mouth, say things that inspire boycotts, or command a big salary. She won't even need restroom breaks. The idea and concept was never meant to blatantly disrespect any of my colleagues by creating a situation in which would replace their jobs in jeopardy, Garcia blogged. Somewhat grammatically garbled on mysanantonio.com. My intention was solely to reinvent a possible new method of automation. And on our posting, we put quotes around the word debuting an AI robot DJ because most, if not almost all, of your favorite radio stations are automated. The guys come in ahead of time and record their voice tracks, and the program plugs those in because they've already picked their music. They know exactly what they're doing. There's no human element. There's no passion for music. It's just another job run by multinational corporations. That's why you need to support your alternative media outlets. San Antonio radio station to debut artificially intelligent robot DJ, but as we note, no reaction yet from the DJ 3000.
Look, our ratings are down, and the station is being swamped with angry calls and letter bombs. And it's all your fault.
Yes, it is, ma'am.
This is the DJ 3000. It plays CDs automatically, and it has three distinct varieties of inane chatter.
Hey, hey, how about that weather out there? Whoa, that was a caller from hell. Well, hot dog, We have a wiener.
Man, that thing's great.
Don't praise the machine.
If you don't get that kid an elephant by tomorrow, the DJ 3000 gets your job.
Looks like those clowns in Congress did it again. What a bunch of clowns.
How does he keep up with the news like
How does it keep up with the news like that? That 15-plus-year-old clip from The Simpsons, I believe on the Bart Gets an Elephant episode, shows you the DJ 3000 and shows you that this is not a new idea, and there's been a move from the very beginning to have very tightly controlled media and information. That's why we use this while we can with what may be, when we look back with 2020 hindsight, some wild, wild west era of a free and open internet as it is, as we're coming to you right now. So as long as the satellites can stay in the sky, we can keep doing this. That's all our posted media to the main sites in the kingdom, MediaMonarchy.com, Holy Hexes, Cyberspace War, and Food World Order. But quickly here at the end, as we noted, we continue to update our Twitter feeds at Media Monarchy and at Navigate Netflix while we were on vacation. So let's blast through some of these things quickly as I probably fumble and bumble through them for things that maybe aren't posted to the sites. So again, if you're not on Twitter, I enjoy it. It's nothing but content, and it, as of yet, has not been gobbled up by a multinational corporation. Lionel Media notes the 9/11 anniversary is coming and no one cares to open their eyes. Enough with Chaz Bono already. We Are Change, Central PA, notes to know your rights. There will be police state checkpoints this Labor Day weekend. Global Research says you only believe the official 9/11 story because you don't know the official 9/11 story. Family of woman found bound and dead in CEO's California mansion objects to the suicide finding. U.S. stock futures turn sharply lower after government report shows economy added no jobs in August. Dow futures fall 166 points. Unemployment at 9.1. A 34-year-old man arrested by detectives investigating the phone hacking scandal, according to reports. Relics from 9/11 going on display in Washington, a piece of Flight 93. More on that from Activist Post. Could a cyber war take out WikiLeaks? A magnitude 7.1 earthquake hits Alaska just a few hours ago. U.S. expected to sue banks over mortgages. IBM builds biggest ever disk for a secret customer. That's from Intel War. As is this, military contractors hire to create fake Facebook accounts, infiltrate opposing groups. The race is on for Libya's oil, with Britain and France both staking a claim. Berlusconi vows to leave shitty Italy in conversation recorded by police. Half of U.S. adults will be obese by 2030, report says. Huffington Post noting that Ron Paul can win. And there's also a series of angry airport-related tweets from Jimmy the Jerk as I go stir-crazy being trapped on a plane listening to people blather for hours and hours and hours, one of them being a guy who works for targeting systems in the war machine. Lawrence O'Donnell notes there's nothing more fraudulent than Giuliani as the hero of 9/11. A volcano spews blast of ash in the sky south of Mexico City. Why socially aware liberals, anarchists, and environmentalists should vote for Ron Paul in 2012. Japan finds radiation spread over a wide area. TriMet, my public transportation here in Oregon, raises fares and cracks down on fare cheaters. Meanwhile, also in Oregon, Florida company intends to sue Oregon health authorities over salmonella outbreak. The updates go on and on and on related to Hurricane Irene. Obama's illegal uncle arrested Uncle Omar, almost hits a cop car, tries to call the White House. Again, back in Oregon, we're installing the largest solar highway project in the U.S. And it goes on and on and on, my friends, noting, of course, the things like watching the CNN Fear-a-thon and their using of a computer-generated lightning flash in the background to heighten the tension during Hurricane Irene. Heck of a job, Wolfie. More and more tweets on twitter.com/MediaMonarchy, as well, NavigatingNetflix.com. We have at Navigate Netflix as their stock tumbles as streaming talks with Liberty Media's Stars channel end. An amazing documentary, a meta-documentary called Double Take, is available for instant watch, mixing Cold War media, memes, and Alfred Hitchcock's fondness for characters meeting their doubles. Meanwhile, Steven Soderbergh fears his new film, Contagion, will turn moviegoers into germ obsessives. All that and so very much more as we run out of time on this B-Side episode 229, my friends. We will be back next week, September 9th, 2011, for our 9/11 plus 10 anniversary episode. My name is James Evan Pilato. We are, of course, always broadcasting live from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, zeropointradio.com, and revereradio.net. We're going to go out with a song the way we subtitled our August news purge. It's Peggy Lee asking the question, is that all there is, my friends? And we always note, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care.
I remember when I was a little girl, our house caught on fire. I'll never forget the look on my father's face as he gathered me up in his arms and raced to the burning building out on the pavement. And I stood there, shivering in my pajamas and watched the whole world go up in flames. And when it was all over, I said to myself, is that all there is to a fire? Is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friends, then let's keep dancing. Let's break out the booze and have a ball. If that's all there is. And when I was 12 years old, my daddy took me to the circus, the greatest show on earth. There were clowns and elephants and dancing bears, and a beautiful lady in pink tights flew high above our heads. And as I sat there watching, I had the feeling that something was missing. I don't know what, but when it was all over, I said to myself, is that all there is to the circus? Is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friends, then let's keep dancing. Let's break out the booze and have a ball. If that's all there is. And then I fell in love with the most wonderful boy in the world. We'd take long walks down by the river, or just sit for hours gazing into each other's eyes. We were so very much in love. And then one day, he went away, and I thought I'd die, but I didn't. And when I didn't, I said to myself, is that all there is to love? Is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friends, then let's keep. I know what you must be saying to yourselves. If that's the way she feels about it, why doesn't she just end it all? Oh no, not me. I'm not ready for that final disappointment. 'Cause I know, just as well as I'm standing here talking to you, that when that final moment comes and I'm breathing my last breath, I'll be saying to myself, is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, let's break out the booze and have a ball.
that's all there is.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Say out on my track.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.